Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, October 21st, 2021. County seeks expert to advise on potential insurance payout in Sanchez lawsuit. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. A lawsuit brought against Presidio County by Katie Sanchez in 2018 still looms large over local officials, who have yet to receive a definitive judgment from a higher court. Sanchez was once the director of the Office of Management and Budget, a position that was eliminated after she ran unsuccessfully for county treasurer in 2018. Shortly thereafter, she sued the county on the grounds that it had violated her First Amendment right to run for office. While the county's defense argued that removing Sanchez's office was a simple cost-cutting measure, internal emails unearthed in the lawsuit and previously reported on by the Big Bend Sentinel suggested Francis Garcia, who still holds the office of county treasurer, worked to cut Sanchez's position on retaliatory grounds. Over the summer, a federal jury sided with Sanchez and ruled for the county to pay $2 million in compensatory and punitive damages, the highest amounts suggested by Sanchez's attorney. At last Wednesday's commissioners' court meeting, County Attorney Rod Ponton informed the commissioners that the county had received a letter from TAC, the Texas Association of Counties, who has provided lawyers for Presidio County's defense in this case, and will be responsible for paying the damages if the federal judge sides with the jury's ruling. The letter from TAC warned county officials that the risk pool reserves the right to not pay the settlement. If approved, the Sanchez decision would max out the county's insurance policy, which is currently $2 million. Sanchez's camp has requested an additional $252,395 to cover attorney fees accrued over the course of fighting this case. The county will be on the hook for any amount over their policy, and Ponton has repeatedly warned that insurance premiums will go up regardless of the final dollar amount. The letter from the TAC risk pool raised the sobering possibility that the county might have to financially shoulder the burden of the entire lawsuit, which would translate into higher tax rates for Presidio County residents. "It's a shot in our back," said Commissioner Buddy Knight at Wednesday's meeting. Ponton explained that TAC is nervous about offering an insurance payout for a judgment against the county reflecting fraud, dishonesty, or bad faith of its employees, but stressed that the letter quickly got into the tangled minutiae of insurance law. He suggested hiring an expert to help the county negotiate its insurance policy with TAC. "It's a very specialized corner of the law, so I want the best person around," he said. Ponton seemed to think that the legal advice the county needed would clarify the difference between fraud, dishonesty, or bad faith, and the language used to justify the punitive damages assessed against Garcia by the jury in Pecos this summer. Civil suit settlements, including punitive damages awarded for what Ponton called willful conduct of county employees, should hypothetically be covered by the insurance policy, so the change in TAC's tune caught the commissioners by surprise. Commissioners voted to authorize Ponton to engage counsel to ensure payment of any future judgment against Presidio County and Francis Garcia. County Judge Cinderella Guevara The only dissenting vote at the fateful commissioner's court meeting in 2018 that axed Sanchez's position plans to head into executive session at the October 27th meeting in Presidio to discuss the letter. "It seems like it's just a disclaimer," she said, but echoed Ponton's opinion that more information was needed to help the county navigate its next steps. Presidio County moves to transfer ownership of cemetery to Lipan Apache Tribe of Texas. By Sam Karras, SAM at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, at last Wednesday's commissioner's court meeting, Presidio County made progress toward transferring ownership of the Lipan Apache Cemetery in Presidio to the Lipan Apache Tribe of Texas. The move to transfer ownership, presented by County Attorney Rod Ponton, represents a significant shift in the county's approach to dealing with the issue of how to care for the cemetery, which has been threatened for many years by development in Presidio. The cemetery is the final resting place for individuals in the Aguilar and Ornelas families, whose descendants can be found all over Presidio. Family Representative Christina Hernandez has put the count around 500 individuals in the region alone. Previously, Ponton, who is also head of the Presidio County Historical Commission, had proposed deeding the land to the Presidio County Historical Commission, but that plan was scrapped after concerns were raised by the Lipan Apache Tribe of Texas and the Big Bend Conservation Alliance, who have been working together to preserve the cemetery. The cemetery currently spans two lots of city land and three lots of county land off of Market Street. It's basically in the middle of town, and neither the county or the city own it as a cemetery, Ponton explained. It's unclear how the city and county ended up with these lots, but it's probably non-payment of taxes. Official records show the transfer of ownership of the land in 1991 from a Mr. and Mrs. Ramos. Around that time, the city announced plans to widen and pave the dirt road at the base of the burial mound. Community members and the Texas Historical Commission's Archaeological Stewardship Network stepped in to delineate the boundaries of the cemetery, and the city development at the site was temporarily paused. Over the next three decades, the surrounding streets were paved, and an alleyway was bulldozed into the burial mound. Utility lines were installed throughout the cemetery. Now, a few of the graves are marked by the piles of cairns solemnly gathered by the people who buried their dead there generations ago, Tribal Administrator Oscar Rodriguez wrote in a paper presented to the Texas Historical Commission in February. Rock walls made with these stones are visible throughout the neighborhood today. The cemetery's history dates back to the 1790s, when the Spanish government apportioned a reservation for the Lipan Apache near what's now known as the Barrio de los Lipanes. Records of nomadic Apache presence in the area dates back even further to the 1680s, when Humano leader Juan Sabiata petitioned the Diocese of El Paso for a mission in Presidio Ojinaga. Sabiata hoped a spiritual and political alliance with the Spanish would help protect his people from the Apaches, who were competing for resources with the Humanos and the dozens of other indigenous groups who called La Junta de los Rios, the area around what's now Presidio Ojinaga, home in the 17th century. While many Lipan chose to return to their nomadic lifestyle after the eventual ultimatum from the Spanish government, the Prairie Grass Band put down roots. Over many generations, they became a part of the blend of indigenous and colonial cultures that make Presidio and Ojinaga a distinctive part of the Big Bend today. despite their relative assimilation. By the 1860s, U.S. cavalry visiting the area described them as friendly while waging an all-out war against other Lipan bands in the region. Some racial stigma remained. Hernandez, who has been helping lead the charge to protect the cemetery, remembers a family story from her great-great-grandfather, who is buried in the cemetery. In a break with tradition, his wife was buried at the church. Some members of Hernandez's family say that as an indigenous man, he wanted to be buried with his people. Others say he was not allowed to be buried at the church because of his Lipan identity. Hernandez has been working to protect the cemetery practically from birth. From around the time she was 2 years old, her family sent her to Presidio every summer to spend time with her grandparents. A regular feature of these visits was visiting and cleaning the cemetery, which was referred to in her family as the Aguilar Cemetery, because those ancestors were the only ones whose named grave markers had not disappeared over the years. Hernandez, who now commutes every other month between Austin and Presidio, says the move to legally transfer the land back to the Lipan Apache was sparked by frustrations in her family about how to take care of the cemetery without the land rights. "We weren't able to make improvements because the city and county own that land," she explained. One of the biggest budget items the family wants is the creation of a fence around the perimeter of the cemetery to protect the mound from vehicle and foot traffic. The fence is estimated to cost between $40,000 and $60,000, a figure that does not include ongoing maintenance. Hernandez says county, city, and state officials started to change their tune once they realized the true financial scope tied to the cemetery's maintenance and preservation. Ponton's plan, presented at this week's meeting, hinged on Texas cemetery law. The county can give away land to be used as a cemetery to a qualified nonprofit, but the city isn't legally able to make that same transfer. Ponton proposed the city give up their lots to the county, and the commissioner's court moved to pre-authorize the transfer to the Lipan tribe once the city filed their deed transfers. That was scheduled to happen at a Presidio City Council meeting on October 18th, but the meeting was postponed until November 1st. Still, the family is hopeful for the future. "We're no longer bystanders of our own history. That's what we've felt for a long time," Hernandez said. "The city and county have done a great job of making us feel a part of this process. They recognize that this isn't a political issue, that this is really the return of property that over the course of history came into their hands. It offers recognition to us and to the people interred in the cemetery that we exist, that we aren't just some blip in history or that we never existed. It validates us." State legislators approve $15.5 million for new Presidio Railroad Inspection Station. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio. Funding to build an inspection station along the rail line that passes through Presidio is nearly on its way after the State House and Senate passed a bill this week that will give $15.5 million in funding to the project. While the bill still needs the governor's sign-off to become final, the bill passed quickly through the state legislature, which is in its third specially called session of the year. Senate Bill 8 distributes $16.8 billion of federal money from the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan, funding a wide variety of projects, from food banks and rural hospitals to broadband infrastructure. Toward the end of the bill, $15.5 million was allocated to the Texas Department of Transportation to construct a customs inspection station in Presidio as part of the state's COVID-19 relief and recovery package. The South Orient Rail Line, SORL, that runs from Fort Worth to the port town of Topolobampo on the Pacific coast of Mexico, has already seen significant upgrades over the past couple years in preparation for the reopening of the International Rail Bridge that connects Presidio and Ojinaga. After a fire badly burned the rail bridge in 2018, a restoration began in 2018. This year, the infrastructure needed for the train to physically cross the bridge was completed. However, to get commerce moving internationally, goods in the train need to be inspected by U.S. Customs to make sure cargo is in compliance with federal laws and regulations. Local State Representative Eddie Morales said that on top of the federal funding for the U.S. CBP rail inspection station, the newly allocated money will pay for an X-ray machine, lighting, fencing, and other miscellaneous improvements to ensure that rail imports and exports can move through safely and efficiently. In September, a U.S. Customs and Border Protection spokesperson said they were collaborating with TxDOT and rail line operator Texas Pacifico to establish the infrastructure and operational procedures necessary to initiate international rail traffic via the Presidio Railroad Bridge. Jake Giesbrecht of the Presidio International Port Authority said that the land that's being eyed for the inspection station is currently owned by a mix of private landowners, the railroad, the USDA, and CBP. Construction of a permanent inspection facility may take 30 to 36 months to complete. Stan Metter, a spokesperson for Texas Pacifico, estimated last month. A temporary facility is likely to come sooner, though, so that international commerce can begin. What we're doing right now are features putting in place things that allow CBP to effectively process trains before that permanent facility gets built, Metter said last month. Texas Pacifico has been moving trains on the north part of the tracks, while CEMEX, a Mexican building material company, has begun running the rails south of the border. Both sides are hoping to cross the international bridge as soon as possible, though no date has been set for the first train to roll across the bridge from one country to the other. Presidio City Administrator Brad Newton pointed out that while most rails in the area seem to travel east to west, the return of this rail would be a crucial north-to-south transit point. When opened, it will be one of only six railways that cross the U.S.-Mexico border. While in and of itself, this funding does not open the bridge tomorrow, it is a significant milestone in ensuring that commerce on the rail line with our largest trading partner, Mexico, will soon be reestablished and done in a manner that does not compromise border security, Metter of Texas Pacifico said this week, after the $15.5 million was secured. The funding given to the project this week is being added to $17.5 million already secured by TxDOT from federal sources, completing the budget of the $33 million project. This is an exciting milestone for our district. The border inspection station at Presidio is a tremendous opportunity locally, statewide, and internationally, State Senator Cesar Blanco stated in a release after the bill's passage Monday night. The growth of trade by rail and road through Presidio, the next frontier for border trade, will benefit our local and state economies. Newton assured that there will be construction jobs brought to the area because of the project, as well as adding new CBP staff once the station is up and running. The city administrator said the train's ability to carry the equivalent of 400 truckloads of goods could also benefit Presidio by lessening wear and tear on the highways and improving air quality in the area. He also hopes to spin the growth of Presidio Commerce into a free trade zone, FTZ, a federal classification that could bring certain benefits, like changing the rules around duty fees and offering streamlined customs procedures. From a city perspective, Newton said, a free trade zone would give a lot of opportunities to a lot of different people, opportunities to develop their lands, and instead of growing tumbleweeds, they could grow a business. They could build a warehouse or get involved in international trade. There's dormant land that could be farmed. While none of that will happen overnight, Newton said the new bridge and the reintroduction of the railroad to the community would be a big part of moving the FTZ effort forward. As American ports have faced bottlenecks this year and called the reliability of the global supply chain into question, international trade has demanded more viable trade routes. While it will take time to launch, the rail line through Presidio will be a useful connection for the United States to access shipping happening in the Pacific, through the Mexican port in Topolobampo, and to take advantage of the production of goods and raw materials within Mexico. This is the escape route for a lot of overload, Giesbrecht of the new international port said. Senator Blanco also hammered home Presidio's growing place in the supply chain, stating, the allocated funds for the completion of the SORL will bolster Texas' economic competitiveness by creating a new alternative for shipping between Texas and Mexico and alleviating congestion at other ports of entry on the Texas-Mexico border. The city of Presidio can once again utilize the South Orient Rail Line to bring back rail trade to their community, said Representative Morales. Two horse race betting initiatives on November 2nd ballot will determine the future of Presidio Racetrack. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. Early voting is underway for the November 2nd special election, in which voters will decide on a number of amendments to the state constitution, as well as two local initiatives that could lead to the development of a horse racetrack in Presidio County. The two referendums unique to Presidio County voters are whether or not to legalize pari-mutuel and simulcast betting within the county. Pari-mutuel wagering, as it will be written on the ballot, refers to a type of betting in which bets are placed in a pool, and simulcast wagering allows for people to place bets virtually or without being physically present. If passed, the initiatives would legalize two types of betting on horse racing within a Texas Racing Commission licensed facility. The ballot initiatives were prompted by a group looking to greenlight construction of a horse race track in Presidio County. The site for the racetrack, a 20-acre plot off of Highway 67, south of the Presidio Airport, has already been secured by the hopeful racetrack runner Jose Valdez with the intent to expand the property. Other pari-mutuel tracks in Texas are much larger, like Lone Star Park Track in Grand Prairie, which measures 315 acres and requires a hefty amount of maintenance. The proposed racetrack, currently going by the name Presidio Desert Downs, is the brainchild of Presidio native Valdez, who has a family background in horse racing. While Valdez now primarily resides in Dallas, he and his family still own land in Presidio County. The idea to start a horse race track was born out of a desire to breathe some life back into the town, Valdez said. I hate to say it, but every time we go down there, it becomes sadder, to be honest with you. I love Presidio. I love the area. We're losing a lot of people there. We had a decline in the county numbers, and so it's just a shame, said Valdez. We've always talked about going back and doing something for the community. Valdez serves as managing director of Wisdom Advisors, a health and safety consultancy, and brought together a handful of other partners to assist with the racetrack effort, some of which are fellow Presidio natives looking to add something new to the town. In addition to creating jobs and increasing visitation in the area, Valdez seeks to fill what he believes is a need in the horse racing market in Texas. Due to the climate in Presidio, the proposed season for the races would fall between November and February, careful not to overlap with pre-existing circuits in other parts of the state. The idea is to help keep horses active in what would traditionally be their dormant period. If voters approve the betting measures this November, the proposal will advance to the Texas Racing Commission for approval, a multi-step process which is likely to take around a year. Over the past 10 years, the commission has only received one application for a new racetrack out of Jefferson County 3 years ago, which is still ongoing. There are currently 4 active horse race tracks in Texas and 3 that hold licenses but are not conducting live races. The active tracks are located near Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and Austin. The locations create a convenient circuit for traveling horses and trainers, which would have a longer trek out to Presidio. The closest regulated racetracks to West Texas are Sunland Park Racetrack and Casino, Ruidosa Downs, and Zia Park Casino Hotel and Racetrack, all in New Mexico. Nationally and statewide, the popularity of horse racing has been on the decline for many years. Possible reasons could be increased awareness of animal welfare or the industry's inability to reach new audiences. Maintaining horses is also a costly endeavor. In the past 20 years, the number of races in Texas has continued to decline from 2014 in 2001 to 761 in 2019, and reaching a 20-year low of 668 in 2020, according to statistics from the Jockey Club. I think that racing just isn't an industry anymore as far as getting the public out, said Mary Baxter, a retired exercise rider who has lived in Marfa since 1995. Baxter said after the legislature enacted the Texas Racing Act in 1986, which created the Texas Racing Commission and permitted pari-mutuel wagering, thus legitimizing the racetracks, it seemed like Texas had missed its opportunity to capitalize on the popularity of horse racing. All the training tracks that opened up when we got pari-mutuel, they're all kaput. They're gone. I mean, I don't mean to sound so negative, but I witnessed it all. Because we had wanted pari-mutuel for so long to be able to do a better job of racing, and then when it finally came, it just was kind of a big disappointment in a lot of ways, said Baxter. Before the Texas Racing Act was passed, all tracks were bush tracks or unregulated tracks, which are now considered illegal. Baxter said after pari-mutuel was passed, it increased the cost of hosting races due to tighter regulations and requirements. Years ago, when it was bush tracks, it wasn't so complicated because you didn't have to have veterinarians and all the support. Now you have to pay track vets and tellers at the windows. It's kind of hard to imagine that happening in the Presidio, but I've been wrong before, said Baxter. Valdez is hoping Presidio Desert Downs would cut back on the amount of bush track racing in the area. He said he hopes to partner with Presidio's sister city, Ojinaga, to host U.S. versus Mexico international races and work with federal agencies to obtain visitor permits. That's one of the positive things about this. We think it'll tame down the bush track racing. We don't know that for a fact, of course, but that's one of the reactions that we're getting from the people in the area, said Valdez. Valdez estimates once the facility is fully operational, the racetrack could employ anywhere from 80 to 120 individuals, but at the start, while they are scaling up, it may be closer to 20 to 30. While the horse racing will be seasonal and focus on quarter horse and thoroughbred racing, there is talk of the possibility of keeping the facility open year-round and utilizing it for a different purpose. While similar sites in New Mexico and other neighboring states offer casinos in addition to racetracks, that would be illegal under current law in Texas. Valdez says if the track is realized, they intend to partner with local organizations such as Sol Ross University's Veterinary Science Program to bring students to the track and Big Bend Conservation Alliance to ensure the track's lighting doesn't interfere with preserving the area's dark skies. Valdez said he has received positive feedback about the potential track. So far, what we've heard is we have no opposition, but we also know that may be a false sense. We've been calling folks, we've been posting on Facebook, said Valdez. Because the proposed site of the racetrack falls outside of Presidio city limits, taxes collected from new construction would benefit the county, the hospital district, and the local school district, said Presidio Commissioner Buddy Knight. Racetracks do not act as a revenue generator for the state, but more so affect local economies, said Robert Elrod, public information officer with the Texas Racing Commission. It has a pretty large impact on where the tracks are and on the whole state as far as the horse industry is concerned, said Elrod. And there's a whole industry that horse racing helps support that's pretty much statewide. That's not going to show up in any sort of state tax, or I don't think anywhere, but it is a part of the economy. In Texas, we're surrounded by states that have horse racing, but at their tracks, at all of them surrounding the state, they also have other kinds of gambling, whether it's slot machines or table games. They have been able to offer bigger purses because they use some of the money from the other gambling. Horsemen are going to go wherever the biggest purses are. So over a period of years, more and more, we're going across the border, said Elrod. In an effort to offer more competitive purses or prizes compared to neighboring states, Texas passed an act of the legislature in 2019 called the Horse Industry Escrow Account, which helps boost the purses via a percentage of racetrack wagers and sales of horse-related items in Texas. Average purses have gone up slightly every year until the average shot up from 7,000 until the average shot up from $17,701 in 2019 to $26,391 in 2020. Elrod said the purse increase has led to people bringing their horses back to race in Texas, but due to COVID-19, more time is needed to measure the impact of the higher winnings. Presidio County voters can participate in early voting from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays through October 29th ahead of the special election taking place November 2nd. Voting will take place at the Marfa Visitor Center / USO building, 302 South Highland Avenue, and the Presidio County Annex building, 300 O'Reilly Street, for North and South County residents, respectively. On November 2nd, voters can visit either polling place to cast their vote anytime from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, October 21st, 2021. PCMH awaits vaccine mandate by Megan Waring. Employees at Pecos County Memorial Hospital could face regulations that would require them to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19. On October 19th, the PCMH Board of Managers discussed a federal mandate that would become a reality for staff. Various departments were informed that if the mandate were to go into effect, the hospital would have to abide by it because it accepts federal funds. The big question that comes up is, if we get to that point and we are mandated and we don't get vaccinated, what's the alternative? Right now, there is no alternative unless there is a medical reason why you can't get vaccinated or a religious reason. Otherwise, you have to get it. Last month, President Biden directed the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to write rules requiring employers with at least 100 workers to get vaccinated or require unvaccinated to show a negative test result weekly. On the state level, Governor Greg Abbott is looking to prevent the mandate altogether. He issued an executive order on Monday, October 11th, that prohibits any entity from mandating vaccines for people who object due to personal conscience, religious, or medical reasons, including past recovery from COVID-19. The standard rationale for why employees choose to not get the vaccine is because they are concerned about what it will do to their body. We don't have the numbers. We are not allowed to keep up with who is vaccinated and who is not. But for sure, I know there are about 5 people who say they will not get vaccinated. It could be December or January until the hospital would have to consider this. Guidance on the regulations should be given to the hospital when the mandate is administered. Soul Ross Theater hits 100th season by Roxanne Hill. Live theatrical productions have delighted enthusiastic audiences for centuries, and in the Big Bend, the Sol Ross State University Theater Department has entertained and brought unique experiences about all aspects of life. Sol Ross will kick off its 100th season this fall, and it promises to offer something for everyone. Marjorie Scott, Chair of Fine Arts and Communication and Assistant Professor of Theater, looks forward to welcoming area residents to a season full of eerie tales, drama, comedy, and more. Sol Ross Theater has been going on for a very long time, and it actually started as a student club on campus called the Mask and Slipper Club. It eventually became a major on campus after World War II. We have been producing summer theater for about 56 years, but theater as an academic or student organization has been going on for 100 years, so it's a very old tradition. A lot has changed in the past 100 years, and the current program tries to fulfill its role in addressing difficult topics, reviving some classic theater presentations, and providing learning opportunities to students, said Carolyn Barrientes, Assistant Professor of Theater. Barrientes teaches interior and costume design and technical theater. She stressed that one of her goals is to develop English-Spanish bilingual theater. The season kicks off on Friday, October 22nd, just in time for Halloween, with the first production of the season, Blythe Spirit, a funny and aptly eerie British comedy by 20th century English playwright Noel Coward. The play is set in the 1940s England during World War II and features themes of deception, love, loyalty, and the complex legacy of past relationships. Barrientes went all out with the elegant costume design of the time period, incorporating jewel tones in the costumes with a variety of colors. Blythe Spirit is about a husband whose ex-wife comes back from the dead and haunts him and his current wife. She is summoned back from the dead in a seance to a medium, and chaos ensues. It's a classic piece of theater and fun for the whole family. Despite the subject of death, it's done in such a way that even children can enjoy it. Next month, Scott will be spearheading a walking ghost tour in downtown Alpine in conjunction with the Alpine Historical Association. Scott is writing and producing original content inspired by ghost stories from the Big Bend. This season, military veterans are also given a perk complimentary admission. We have a soft spot for our folks in uniform, said Scott, so they are welcome to attend all our shows for free. Scott also said that the Kid Theater Camp will be back next summer after a halt due to coronavirus concerns. Barry Antos said Scott and Scott are excited to be able to produce live shows for audiences again and celebrate the 100th season on stage. The community is a big supporter of ours, said Barry Antos. Without the community, we wouldn't be the same. We rely on their support, not only in Alpine, but also in the communities of Fort Davis, Marfa, Fort Stockton, Terlingua, and Presidio. Said Scott, we are very proud of continuing the tradition of bringing 100 years of theater. It's one of those things that does bring a lot of joy to a lot of people in the region, and we feel very fortunate to still be doing it. Crews Fixed the Water Leak by Jeremy Gonzalez. A major waterline break occurred last week behind the Pecos County Precinct 2 office within the county yard. City crews were on the scene making repairs Tuesday, at October 12th at 11:30, and continued working overnight until 5 a.m. the next morning. The city lost approximately 2,800 gallons per minute and 16,800 gallons per hour for 17 hours. Financially, the leak was calculated to be a loss of $5,800. City Water Department Supervisor Carlos Lopez says the damage occurred behind a 3-inch valve connected to the city's 8-inch main line. Lopez explained the valve ruptured from high water pressure. Assistant Public Works Director Luis Guerra, who was also on the scene, shared that the city had a couple of its supervisors and wastewater employees on site helping the water department. Water operator Billy Gonzalez and field operator Jack Sanchez and Ruben Ramirez of the Pecos County Water Improvement District were also present helping the city. It was a lot of water to keep up with, said Guerra. They were up against high pressure and then having to do all the work underwater was tough. Everything's done by touch because that water's murky and muddy. We had two supervisors there watching out for their fatigue and their overall safety. I have so much more respect for the water department after witnessing this repair firsthand. There's a lot of physical work that is unseen by the public eye. While majority of the town was asleep and they stayed up all night, chest deep in cold water, working hard. A lot of areas were affected by this leak and they did whatever it took to get the job done. Guerra said the city employees left the job site at 5:15 a.m., and by the time they dropped off all their equipment at the city yard, it was 6:30, almost time for the next workday. I was there, and I saw those men working in those conditions and the challenges they faced. This water break was very challenging, and these men got it done. They did a great job. Pecos County Commissioner Robert Gonzalez was not present during the repairs, but gave kudos to the city crews for the overnight work that took place. The city did an excellent job. I want to thank all the city employees that helped us with connecting our end of the line. Comanche Tortilla Factory to air on NBC. The Comanche Tortilla and Tamale Factory will be showcased by the Texas County Reporter on Saturday, October 22nd and the 23rd on NBC. The show will air on October 22nd at 6:35 and on Sunday at 10:35. Hosts Bob and Kelly Phillips met with Ben Gallegos and his five sons. When we found out about the Comanche Tortilla and Tamale Factory, we knew we had to make a trip to Fort Stockton to visit the Gallegos family. The episode of the show featuring the Comanche Factory will be in the Texas Country Reporter's 50th season. Premiere set at Fort Stockton Community Theater. The newly founded Fort Stockton Film Society will screen its inaugural film, Casablanca, on Saturday, October 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Fort Stockton Community Theater. Admission will be $5 as an opening night special. Capacity is 125 people. Popcorn and sodas will be sold at the movie for $1 each. It's very exciting, a little nerve-wracking, but we're going to pull it together. I'm very excited to do the first one, said Ross Harper, Fort Stockton Film Society president and primary funder for the theater's projector and projector screen. Fort Stockton has been without a movie theater since the Stockton Entertainment closed down nearly 4 years ago. Before then, the Opacus Theater in downtown Fort Stockton carried movies until it burned down, leaving an empty space on Main Street for decades. With the construction of the Nelson Street Theater, J.B. Gallegos, Harper, and Jeremy Gonzalez saw an opportunity to show films in the new facility. So the Fort Stockton Film Society was formed. A screen and projector was purchased with underwriting from Christian Gonzalez and M.R. Gonzalez, and a 501(c) nonprofit was formed. Now it's showtime. Casablanca was selected as the first feature to screen because of its universal acclaim as one of the greatest love stories of all time. The 1942 Warner Brothers production features Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, and strong supporting cast that includes Claude Rains, Peter Lorre, and Paul Heinrich. Casablanca is G-rated and shot in black and white. The next showing will be at 2 p.m. on October 30th. The Society will host a Halloween matinee of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. All information for this show and future screenings will be announced on the FSFS website.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, October 14th. One killed in crash near Piute. According to the initial report by Texas Department of Public Safety media officer Oscar Villarreal, Aaron A. Lara, age 20, of Pecos, was traveling west on Interstate 20, 5 miles west of Piute, around 3:14 in the morning on Saturday. Lara was driving his 2013 Chevrolet Malibu directly behind Martin Mendez, age 28, of Odessa, who was driving a truck tractor towing a semi-trailer. Lara failed to control his speed and struck Mendez in the rear of the truck. Lara was pronounced dead at the scene by Ward County Precinct 1 and Precinct 4 Justice of the Peace Danny Bustos. The report noted that Lara was not wearing a seatbelt while Mendez was. Weather conditions were clear and dry at the time of the crash. Mendez was not injured as a result of the crash. The crash is still under investigation by Trooper Daniel Leva of Pecos. Two arrested after same home burglarized twice. Theft of truck still unresolved. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Wicket man was arrested October 6th after items from a home recently burglarized twice were found inside his residence. Now authorities are trying to determine if the same suspect is responsible for stealing the resident's truck as well, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Quote, the first report, the burglary, came in on August 12th when the owners of the home, located in the 4200 block of South Veronica, returned home to find forced entry was made into the home and multiple miscellaneous items taken, as well as a 2007 Dodge Ram truck, Valle said. Valle added, quote, the case went cold after the first break-in and we had no suspects, end quote. The second burglary happened around 9 p.m. on September 21st. When the owners returned home, they found the house ransacked and several antique items taken. Quote, through the use of social media and other investigative tools, we were able to identify Corey Wayne Gardner, age 33, and September Willard, age 19, of Odessa, as suspects in the burglary. Several of the stolen miscellaneous items and antique items were recovered at Gardner's home in Wicket, he said. The missing 2007 Dodge was not recovered at the time the stolen items from the home were located. Gardner and Willard were both subsequently arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on a charge of burglary of a habitation, a second-degree felony. On September 29th, deputies spotted the stolen 2007 Dodge Ram near 19th and Stockton Streets and conducted a traffic stop. Quote, the individuals occupying the vehicle at the time of the traffic stop told the deputy that they had just recently purchased the vehicle. Apparently, the title to the truck was also taken during one of the burglaries, Valle said. Continuing the quote, the case of the stolen truck is still under investigation and has not been linked to either burglary suspect. More arrests could be made, he added. Bond for Gardner and Willyard were set at $20,000 each, and both were released after posting the bond. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 20 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Vets Traveling Wall Coming. The American Veterans Traveling Tribute is coming to Monahans. The Wall 2021 will be set up on the grounds of the Ward County Arena and will arrive after 3 p.m. on October 20th. The arena is located in the 3200 block of South Stockton Avenue. The traveling wall includes tributes to veterans who served in the Afghanistan and Iraq War, 9/11, World War I, World War II, Korean War, Cold War, USS Pueblo, Iran Hostage, El Salvador War, U.S. Marine Corps Beirut, El Dorado Canyon, USS Stark Attack, Panama Invasion, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Somalia, Cobar Towers Bomb, USS Cole Attack, and the Fort Hood Attack. The exhibit will be open from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. on October 21st, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on October 22nd and 23rd, and from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. on October 24th. An opening ceremony will be held on October 21st at 6 p.m. Sponsored by the Monahans Chamber of Commerce, the wall is in memory of many and in honor of all. There is no admission fee. Additional COVID fatality reported in Ward County. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The number of active COVID-19 cases continues to drop in Ward County, but one additional death has been reported, bringing the total number of fatalities to 27. That death had not been reported to DSHS as of Wednesday morning. County Judge Greg Holly reported on Monday that there were 125 active cases. That number had dropped to 111 as of Wednesday morning. Also, the Texas DSHS website reported 1,227 confirmed cases, 619 probable, 1,710 recovered, and 26 deaths. Quote, sadly, many are aware of another recent fatality in the county. As noted before, these cases take some time to hit the numbers, so we're often aware of them before they're officially reported. Our prayers are with the family and friends of those suffering serious illness and loss, Holly said on Monday. Statewide, there were 167,455 active cases, 3.4 million confirmed, 689,000 probable, 66,700 deaths, and 3.9 million recoveries. Commissioners approve hospital grant request. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday morning, the Ward County Commissioners approved the request from Ward Memorial Hospital for a $1 million grant and acknowledged the 2020 audit. The meeting was moved from its normal Monday date to Tuesday because of the Columbus Day holiday. The Board of Managers of Ward Memorial Hospital authorized hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez to submit a proposal to the commissioners for the USDA grant in their meeting last Thursday night. The commissioners ratified that request by a unanimous vote. The $1 million grant can be used to help with lost revenue and expenses incurred by the hospital for COVID-19 support. If approved by USDA, the hospital would have 36 months to use the funds. Quote, "We have discussed upgrading the hospital over time in lieu of building a new hospital. These funds can be used toward that. One of the things under consideration is renovation of hospital patient rooms to eliminate shared bathrooms and improve ventilation, which are things required for COVID patients," County Judge Craig Holly said. In addition to Holly, Commissioners Tino Sanchez and Dexter Nichols were present for the meeting. Commissioners Larry Hanna and Eddie Nels were not present. Rocky Reeves of the CPA firm Smith & Reeves PC presented the 2020 county audit. Quote, "This audit is an unmodified opinion, which is the best that can be rendered by a CPA firm," Reeves said. The report stated the net position of the county increased by $17 million. During the year, the county had expenditures of $15.9 million less than the $42.6 million generated in tax and other revenues. Total cost of all the county's programs was $25.8 million, and the general fund ended the year with a balance of $33.2 million. The commissioners acknowledged the audit with unanimous approval. The tax roll for tax year 2021, as submitted by Ward County Tax Assessor-Collector Vicki Heflin, the final step in completing the 2021 budget, was approved. The tax levy from certified value figures was stated at $31.3 million, based on a tax rate of 69 cents per $100 of valuation of $4.5 billion. In other actions, the order of the 143rd Judicial District Court concerning the compensation for the official court reported for 2022 was acknowledged. The total compensation is $7,500 per month. The salary is shared between the three counties comprising the Judicial District. Ward County will be responsible for $3,262 based on 43.5% of the population of the three counties of Loving, Reeves, and Ward. The approval is for the remainder of 2021 for court reporter Una King, who replaced Brock Record after his resignation. The county treasurer's report reflected a balance of $68.9 million in cash and other assets for the month of September. Balance at the beginning of the month was $71.3 million. In routine business, county officials' reports and minutes of the September 27th meeting was approved. The next meeting of the commissioners will be at 9:30 a.m. on October 25th at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Mayor proclaims Chamber of Commerce Week World Polio Day. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. In recognition of the contribution that the Monahans Chamber of Commerce provides to the city, the council approved a proclamation declaring October 18th through 22nd as Chamber of Commerce Week during the Tuesday meeting. On behalf of the city, Mayor Adam Steen presented the proclamation to Chamber Executive Director Teresa Burnett and board members Rex Thee and Jeppy Wilson. Quote, "We are very proud of the work that the Chamber does for the city and the leadership that Teresa provides," Steen said. Mayor Steen also proclaimed October 24th as World Polio Day and encouraged all citizens to join the fight to help eradicate the disease. Also in attendance during the meeting was council members Richard Hawkins, Rudy Hernandez, Ivy Valenzuela, and Calvin Carroll. In other business, Resolution 2021-040 was approved by the council, which will refund utility deposits to City of Monahans Utility Department customers. As per city ordinance, a utility deposit shall be refunded to any customer under the following conditions. The account has been active in the name of the same customer for a period of 3 years. There have been no cutoffs of such account in such 3-year period, and there have not been any late payments or delinquent notices on the customer's record for such 3-year period. The ordinance came from a recommendation from former city manager David Mills in 2015. New this year, the refunds will be credited to the customer's water bill as opposed to mailing a check. Total amount to be refunded as of October 1st is $7,660. In regular business, a replat of lots 29 through 32 in the Southland Edition, otherwise known as 8th and Main Street location, was approved. Quote, the buyer, CHTR Ventures, asked for the replat. The current platting of the land is 4 lots and will be replatted to 1, Thee said. CHTR purchased the lot for $230,000 and will be building an HTO at the location. The quarterly public funds investment portfolio report was also approved. The total fund balance as of September 30, 2021, was $13,285,000. Of that fund, $1,916,000 is in the Monahans Economic Development Fund, $7,223,000 in the Disbursement Fund, and $2,264,000 in the Hotel Motel Tax Fund. In the final actionable item, the September accounts payable was approved by the Council, totaling $777,000. Another 37 animals were euthanized in September, according to Animal Control Officer Ben McGilvray's monthly report. Of the 47 total animals impounded, 30 were dogs, 16 cats, and 1 other. 7 animals were adopted or released, and McGilvray picked up 11 deceased animals. As per city policy, impounded animals are only kept at the city pound for 3 days. Animals not adopted or picked up by their owners are euthanized after the 3-day waiting period. Anyone wishing to adopt an animal can call the Monahans Police Department at 943-3254. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, October 26th, in the council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.